Good afternoon. First of all, I would like to thank OASPA for the invitation to talk at this conference. In my talk, I plan to cover three main areas. First, a bit of history about the Royal Society to provide some sort of historic context. Then I'll go on to explain what open biology is and why we decided to launch it. And finally, and probably the most interesting area is that why we decided to launch a selective journal rather than a kind of plus one type journal. First, a bit about the Royal Society. The Royal Society is a fellowship of eminent scientists. It's also the UK Academy of Science. We've been going a long time, since 1660. And essentially our mission is to champion science in the UK and throughout the world. We do a range of learned society-like activities. We fund scientific research. We provide policy advice to government. We're trying to encourage more people to study science at school. And really, we want to kind of, you know, make science interesting. That's another of our aim. And of course, we publish scientific research. So let me introduce you to this chap, Henry Oldenburg, born in Bremen. Oldenburg was the person who started the publishing at the Royal Society. Now, Oldenburg was he's a prodigious writer of letters. He used to correspond with scientists throughout Europe through letters. And he became secretary of the Royal Society, the Society's first secretary, and he hit on the idea to publish these letters, you know, in a journal. And this led to this journal, Philosophical Transactions. It's a very odd name, and it's always a kind of cross we have to bear, saying, you know, what on earth is it? But I guess that's what science was called in those days, natural philosophy. In setting up this journal, he established two things, really. First of all, the principle of scientific priority. Before this time, scientists used to communicate in code. And then what would happen then, somebody else would make the same discovery, and then the first scientist would say, oh, well, I discovered this first. Here's my code, and here's how you kind of translate the code. And in a way, Oldenburg started off peer review. It got to the stage where, you know, he had too many submissions. Maybe it became a mega journal, I don't know. And what he had to do really was he decided to kind of ask colleagues to, you know, who were experts in the field to actually review the paper. So it was the early form of peer review. And the journal initially covered the whole of science. It's interesting, but Oldenburg basically, he paid for everything to do with the journal. And he hit a deal with the Royal Society that he could have any profits from the journal. But in his lifetime, he never received any money for the journal. I mean, it's so much of the subscription model, but he didn't really receive anything. In this period, we've published about 80,000 articles, some very significant work, the work on Newton, work on DNA, that kind of thing. One thing I would pick out from this slide would be the proceedings, which was launched in 1854, which was basically launched on the back of Philosophical Transactions. And essentially the stuff that didn't make it into Philosophical Transactions, certainly initially, would go to the proceedings instead. I mean, I don't know, perhaps an early example of cascading peer review, but it's interesting how that was launched. Okay. We now publish nine journals, two kinds of journal, really. We publish journals as kind of themed issues, so each issue is on a specific area of science, and also we publish research journals where the majority of our submissions come from. All these journals, well, apart from open biology, are kind of subscription-based hybrid journals. The Royal Society and open access, as been pointed out, is that we weren't really an early adopter of open access, but you know, gradually we've come round to it. Even so, we've been kind of hybrid OA since 2005, with Sherpa Romeo Green. We have, for open access articles, we have the most liberal Creative Commons license. We provide kind of developing world access through Research for Life. And in, you know, an interesting recent announcement is that we're going to have a new pricing policy where subscription prices will be kind of based on non-OA articles. And interestingly, this is actually means a slight price drop for one of our journals. Okay. So what's Open Biology? It's an open access journal covering biology at the cellular and molecular level, and it publishes in these range of areas. So I guess potentially with this sort of scope, it's got a chance of becoming, you know, one day a mega journal. As I said, it's selective. I'll come back to this later. Online only, rapid publication, the usual stuff. And we launch officially next month. It's very early days. So why did we launch it? The first thing I think is there's a gap in our subject coverage. We publish a lot in ecology, evolution, behavioural, animal behaviour, that sort of thing. But we publish very little in cellular and molecular biology. Somehow we missed the boat, but this is going to try and make up for it. I think we're well positioned to launch a broad scope journal because we represent the whole of science. So we should, you know, provide, you know, support to academics to publish in all areas of science. And also, you know, like everybody else, you know, we're keen to experiment with open access and experiment with online only. For our subscription journals, around 70% now are just online only in terms of what subscribers take. A lot of people have got rid of the print. So what's the editorial vision? Clearly biologists expect it to be fast, so we need to be fast, and it's covering the areas I've outlined. It's a selective journal, and I'll come onto this more in a minute, but the acceptance criteria are scientific excellence, importance, and originality. The editors and editorial board are actively involved in selecting reviewers and making decisions. And it was quite a surprise when we learnt about the Welcome Journal. And what interested me in that was the fact that they're making a big deal about the fact that, their new journal will be kind of run by active scientists and that sort of thing. Well, I mean, that's how our journals run already, and it's the same for a lot of society journals. We want peer review to be fair and constructive. I mean, another complaint of biologists is that there's endless rounds of review and revision. So we hope to avoid that. We'll have to see. And the main aim really is to get valuable work out there quickly in an open access way. Just to compare Open Biology with our other journals, the main difference are in terms of licensing. Our established journals use a license to publish, but Open Biology clearly needs to be a Creative Commons license. And also, we're just, as somebody else mentioned earlier, we just started to experiment with article level metrics. So that should be interesting. I've tried to create a chart here about where I think Open Biology sits in terms of selectivity, and if I put any journals in the wrong section, I apologise for that. But we aim to operate in a kind of middle ground, really. So obviously you've got the non-selective in terms of importance at this end of the slide, and then you've got the highly selective journals at this end. And so what we're aiming to do is to, you know, if it's good science, we will publish it. Clearly, you know, importance will be a criteria, but we will be chasing impact factor because really impact factor needs, to get a good impact factor, you need a high rejection rate. So it'll be interesting to see how the rejection rate settles down. more selectivity. I mean, essentially, the Royal Society is run by academics, and most of our processes involve selectivity through peer review. So fellows of the Royal Society are selected on peer review, how we allocate research funds the same way. So this is one of the reasons really why we've launched the Selected Journal. It's consistent with what we do. You know, we're out there saying that we represent excellence in science, so it's consistent with the brand to launch a Selected Journal. I mean, I think all journals, coming back to the last slide, you know, have a role. You know, I'm not saying this is the right model, but I think there's room for a kind of spectrum of journals, from the non-selective mega journals through to, you know, the likes of Science and Nature. So I think that spectrum may still exist. At the end of the day, authors will decide, as always. And if they like the concept of open biology, they'll submit to it. If they don't, they won't, and they'll go elsewhere. So a few challenges for the future. I think a challenge, as the G3 speaker said, is to actually make the journal financially viable at a kind of a moderate rejection rate or highest rejection rate. You know, it's difficult. I think it's gonna be difficult to get the money in, I think. We've gone for a very competitive environment. As I say, we haven't got a great track record in molecular and cellular biology, so the challenge is, you know, is attracting, you know, these kind of authors who are very well served to a society journal. We're in the early days of thinking about membership. I mean, you might have seen something on the list that we're asking for feedback on that, about, you know, what membership model is appropriate, because when you've got one journal that's wholly open access and the rest hybrid, what sort of membership model is appropriate? And hopefully we can continue on our journey to be, you know, being recognized as a serious open access publisher. Thank you very much.
I'm aware of the Royal Society actually polling their members for their interest in open access with a questionnaire at the moment. Can you already share with us some feedback, and whether indeed members support your or demand that the Society starts an open access journal?
Yeah, I mean, it's possibly too early to report on that. I don't think the kind of findings have been analysed, but I think it's fair to say there's elements of the fellowship which are, you know, which are very keen on open access.
I'm aware that the Royal Society has a study going at the moment on transparency and openness in relation to data. What's your policy going to be on data issues?
Well, our current journal policy is that it's a condition of submission that authors will share their data. I mean, when they submit, they're asked to kind of state any conditions for sharing. But our view is that authors will share. We had an interesting occurrence with a kind of climate change blogger, and he wanted some tree ring data about climate change. And, you know, we pursued the authors for months to get this data, and eventually we did. And so, you know, it was good to show that the policy had teeth. But there's a lot of issues tied up with data, and I don't think there's a simple answer.
Just a quick one. Do you have an idea of how selective you're going to be? Do you have a rejection rate you're pitching at?
We haven't actually got a target, and I guess this is the thing with kind of academics. You know, they like a bit of kind of autonomy. But I mean, if I had to pick a figure, I think we'd be looking at the kind of, 60 to 70% rejection rate, that kind of figure. But as I say, we haven't got a target, so we'll have to see.